Welcome to the AI on Action podcast, the show where we break down the hype and highlight the practical benefits of data science, machine learning, and artificial intelligence on our everyday lives. To subscribe to the podcast, check us out on iTunes, SoundCloud, and any Android podcast of choice. Hello and welcome once again to the show. My guest today is Jim Dowling. Jim is the CEO of Logical Clocks and Associate Professor at the KTH Royal Institute of Technology in Stockholm. Jim is the mastermind behind the Hadoop open platform Hops, which is the world's newest and fastest distribution of Hadoop. Jim and his team have already won a number of prizes, most recently claiming top prize at the Pappy's Startup Battle in London. I'm delighted to have Jim on the show today, and in this episode we'll learn about why Jim set up Hops and some of the challenges he faced in building the world's fastest distribution platform, how he's pushing into the commercial scene with his company Logical Clocks, and just how far he thinks the product can impact the future, and also find out what it was like winning top prize at the Pappy's AI and Machine Learning Startup Battle. Jim, thank you very much for coming to the show.
Hi, Murray. Great to be here.
Tell me a little bit about the Hadoop Open Platform as a Service, or Hops, and as you prefer to call it, and how did it come about, and what was the main inspiration for launching this platform?
So I'm a researcher, a systems researcher, and I work in the area of distributed systems. And I guess in 2011, I was at an event in Germany and I saw this Hadoop platform, and I'd been working with databases and distributed systems. And I said, well, this platform is interesting. It can be large clusters with thousands of machines. But architecturally, there was one weak point, which is where all of the what we call metadata, the data about the system, was on one server. I said, well, we could make that distributed, and it would make the platform much more flexible, scalable, and we could do lots of interesting things with it. And a naive idea, and it took many years to actually turn that vision into reality, and several research projects and a lot of money.
How do you go about building the world's largest Hadoop distribution platform, and what sort of different challenges did that actually bring up?
So you would think this is something that companies would do, right? You would think, okay, well, we'd like to make Hadoop more scalable. We'd like to have more metadata to enable us to build better security models and platforms. But actually, it was a very challenging research problem. Nobody had built a hierarchical file system with distributed metadata before, where you could keep that metadata consistent. So really, Hops is the first distributed file system that has this distributed metadata in a single namespace, in a single kind of consistent form. So how we went about it was basically we broke the problem down into very small pieces that we could address. We kind of knew at the bottom, at the back of it, that modern new SQL databases, that they had enough throughput that we could use them, but we had to take the protocols for the file system and say, well, how do we turn them into something that will actually work step by step, and you basically end up with a lot of small problems that you solve one by one, and after several years you kind of get to an end goal where you can see, well, now it kind of works, we just need to tweak it here and there to get it put together. But the reason why many companies don't engage in this is because it's a very uncertain effort. You don't know at the beginning if you'll actually make it work, yes or no. We might get some research papers and we get PhDs, even if we don't necessarily succeed. But a company wants a working product at the end that will be better. So that's kind of why you see sometimes new systems come out of research and academia and not directly out of industry.
And tell us about some of the challenges you came at. How did you overcome them? Was it through different people within the industry coming to give you some insights? Was it blogs? Was it podcasts? Was it just literally at a wall?
Yeah, so no systems research happens as an island where somebody comes up with a solution. We worked with Oracle, with a new SQL database called MySQL, and we have a guy called Mikael Rönnström, who's the head of that particular product. The product's been around for 15 years. It's an open source in-memory database. And we also worked with Spotify. So Spotify had Europe's largest Hadoop cluster at the time. So we were able to get a lot of measurement data and a lot of real-world production traffic from Spotify, so we knew exactly how the system should behave in production. And then with Oracle, we were able to tweak a lot of the new SQL backend to get higher throughput so that we could actually make that layer scale out. So we ended up with kind of a multi-layer system with the database as one of the... It was a bottleneck for a while, and we kind of moved the bottleneck to the middle layer, and then you go back and forth, and eventually things get better.
How important was it to work with all those different commercial stakeholders and get everybody's different opinions?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to do systems research at the top level Unfortunately, you now have to have an industrial backer. Like, so if you want to publish, we published that work at Usenix Fast last year, which is a top systems conference. And if you're not publishing with Google or Microsoft or Facebook, or in our case, Spotify, people will say, well, how do you know your system scales to 2,000 servers? How can you be sure? You know, so it is very important. And in that sense, Stockholm is a good place to be. We have a lot of large companies, you know, these multi-billion dollar startups, that Klarna and King and Ericsson and, you know, even H&M have very large data science teams here. We have a lot of these industrial companies right within a stone's throw where we sit. So in that sense, it's a good place to be.
So you're now pushing the Hubs platform into the commercial scene through your company Logical Clocks.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about some of the benefits for people that actually sign up the products. I know you do have a good few users so far.
What we did was we revolutionized Hadoop and we added this new metadata layer, which basically meant we could rebuild all of Hadoop from the bottom up. So if you imagine the way systems are built, you get kind of one layer put on another on top of another. And if the very bottom layer, the metadata layer, is very limited, you end up putting complexity on complexity on complexity. And the current Hadoop distributions, in particular their security model, is very difficult to understand. You have one security model for the file system. You look at what users are allowed to read and write files. And then you have another layer, which is the database, and then another layer on top of that that's supposed to control the other layers. And in practice, people find this extremely difficult to get their heads around, system administrators. And Hops, we massively simplify it by introducing a few new abstractions. We have an abstraction of a project, and we have users who are members of a project, and then we have data sets. And basically, that's a security model. Users can access data sets if they're in the correct project to do so. And data sets can be shared between projects. And that's all users need to understand for the security model. And then everything falls on from that. And that was, I guess, that's the main benefit, this multi-tenancy. Now we can have sensitive data in the same Hadoop cluster. It's secure, and it's easier to share and use that data.
Brilliant. Have you got any testimonials from customers that have kind of made a big impact that they kind of wanted to share? Or?
I guess the biggest one would be Scania, a truck maker. And, you know, they're under heavy competition from the likes of Tesla right now. And traditionally, Scania didn't have a data engineering team, a big data team, an AI, or they have data scientists, but you can have data scientists who are used to writing code in Python and R, and then you give them a terabyte, multi-terabyte data set and say, okay, work with that. And it's a challenge, right? It's a step up. You need support. So we helped Scania work also with another research lab called Fraunhofer. They're based in the west coast of Sweden, to set up a project where they could... In this case, we're looking at multi-terabyte data sets for trucks. And they did some really nice work. I can't really say the details of what the work is, but basically understanding about vehicle positioning and roads and so on was part of that.
Brilliant.
And being able to get the times down then on these Hadoop clusters from queries that were taking hour before 2 hours to a minute is a real breakthrough for them.
I'm not sure. This is kind of off point, but I saw it yesterday. In Sweden, they had this truck that was going along the road, and it was actually charging itself up along the road. What's that? I'm guessing you've
That's
got
Scania as well. It's tangential, but it's kind of interesting. So there are some stretches of road where they're experimenting with. There's two stretches actually. One was originally testing with overhead wires in the north of Sweden. So your truck would have a retractable kind of like in it you would see in a tram, where it would lift up and it would touch the wires and then it would charge for maybe a couple of kilometers and then it would come back down. And the latest one they're trialing is, instead of having overhead electrical wires, having wires in the actual road. So it's like a tram line. You can imagine a tram line where you have a little groove. And what would happen is, from the vehicle, a charging kind of line would come down between the groove, and it would charge as you drive over it, which is kind of a novel idea. And in Sweden, of course, we have long distances. So even if you have a vehicle which has a battery capable of, you know, 400 kilometers distance, that's not going to get you very far.
Yeah, definitely. It's a really, really interesting one. It's well worth Googling that to see the image work. Yeah. It's fantastic. So I also see that you won the recent Pappy Startup Battle in London. So massive congratulations on that. Tell me a little bit more about what the feeling was like to actually win it. And did you have an idea that you're actually probably in the running to win it?
Well, that was a strange one. I mean, the So four companies got selected to present at the conference, and they told us in advance that an AI would select the winner. And we were all very confused and didn't know how to prepare for this event at all. So we all pitched our products and our companies. And then what we had was we had a machine learning system that was trained. It's actually used by a VC. So there's a VC who are going out onto the internet. They're looking at the names of companies. They're scraping data from Crunchbase, scraping data about, you know, blogs, number of followers you have on Twitter and Facebook or whatever. And they're putting all that data in to refine the companies they see as potential clients or customers. So potential VC clients. What they have was a platform to actually evaluate your company. So they actually asked us lots of questions, and some of them were like, you know, how many characters are in the name of your company? Apparently that's an important factor that in deciding whether your company will be successful. How many employees do you have? How many degrees do the members of your startup have? Now, in our case, we have professors with, you know, we have two professors, several postdocs and PhDs. So we were quite high up on that particular feature. And in the end, it was like the machine learning algorithm said logical clocks won. And, you know, this is where you get into interpretability of machine learning models. It's like, why did we win?
Yeah.
I don't know.
So was that an intellect, or was that just literally run an algorithm? That's really interesting.
It was a pure algorithm. And the funny thing is that one of the guys, a Polish guy, he had a slight accent. So he said, how many degrees do the members of your company have? And instead of saying 17, it came out as 170 or something. So obviously that was an outlier, but the algorithm seemed to not be trained on that input data.
Yeah, it's a really good story. You should keep that's a really good story. What's the ultimate goal for Hops and Logical Clocks, and how big do you want to take this?
Well, we're currently in the space of this. The platform itself kind of has big data plus AI. So I haven't talked about AI at all, but the platform is a data science platform primarily. So don't even know they're running on the world's fastest, most scalable Hadoop platform. They just see it as this kind of file system layer. What we support is managing multiple GPUs. So if, for example, you're an organization and you want to buy some GPUs to do some deep learning, well, then Hops is a platform you might consider. Because if you buy, for example, you can buy servers that have these consumer cards. They're quite reasonably priced. And NVIDIA will sell you a box for €150,000 with 8 GPUs, or you can buy a box for €15,000 with 10 GPUs, which is not that much slower than you would think. And you can put these boxes together, and you can have 10 of those, and you'll have 100 GPUs. And what Hops will give you is the ability to use all those 100 GPUs in your TensorFlow or in your PyTorch application. Well, PyTorch is not distributed, but TensorFlow will use all 100 GPUs. But you can still use frameworks like Keras and PyTorch. And then you can do it on big data, because if you're doing deep learning now, the data sets are getting larger. If you're running with multiple GPUs, you want them to coordinate with one another. They want to do hyperparameter optimization, and you need a distributed file system to do that. So this is a user interface. You see a nice user interface. You use Jupyter to write your programs. You run them as Python programs. You can use that as a REST API if you want. And underneath it, you kind of have all the big data and scale out AI features for you.
And finally, Jim, you have a crystal ball. Next 2 to 3 years, AI, ML, DS, where do you see it going?
Well, the interesting point about deep learning and some of the things we've seen in research recently is that we see that as you add more data, the systems get predictably better, right? So so Google had a paper last year where they trained an image recognition system with 900 million images, I believe, and it got better and better and better all the way up to that. Now, that's an insanely huge volume of data, and you would say that, well, only Google can do that. Part of logical clock's mission is to help everyone else get there too. Because if you're in a field where the prediction accuracy of your models is important, or if you think that deep learning is going to make an improvement to your business, then you're going to want to have more and more data. And I think that everyone is going towards more and more data to build better and better models. And if you go back 2 to 3 years, everyone would say deep learning is great for image recognition, but nothing else. Maybe some people knew about voice recognition, but no way it's going to do machine translation, translation English to German, no way. People would say, you know, self-driving cars, forget about it, you know. But a lot of these new technologies are enabled by deep learning, and we don't know really where this will finish. I mean, we know that some industries have been revolutionized, and some others will be or in the process of, and we don't know. It's a very basic technology like electricity or the steam engine, and the uses of those technologies. You know, steam engine was invented in 1780, and really it was until the 1840s when you had ships with steam engines. You know, people decided to put it on anything. So. Never mind trains and so on. So with deep learning, we'll see it spreading to more and more domains. And I can't say where that will finish.
But you know, it's good. It's a really, really good answer. And it's funny how certain things are taking off and then other ones are actually not really going that far as well. There's been an awful lot of hype. So you have to be careful because you can end up going down these rabbit holes and not necessarily know which can actually come and which can't. Jim, thank you very much for your time today. I really, really appreciate it.
All right. No problem, Mark. Nice talking to you.
That's all for this episode of AI in Action. Hope you really enjoyed it. If you'd like to stay updated with all the latest podcasts, then please head over to the website aiinaction.ie and subscribe to the newsletter to get the podcast delivered straight to your inbox. Finally, I'd like to take the time to let you know about the AI Awards. We're now looking for applications from academia and industry professionals to apply. Set up in 2018, the AI Awards are a not-for-profit business, community-led initiative that was set up to celebrate the best in artificial intelligence and data science in Ireland. Our focus is to support the AI community by recognising the hard work and dedication of those working in the field of AI, data science and machine learning. We see this as a fantastic opportunity to showcase your work and skills to the AI community on the island of Ireland and also help raise the profile of Ireland as a destination for AI investment. Winning an award brings industry-wide recognition, raises your company profile, and increases awareness of your brand and product. Applications take only a couple of minutes, so go ahead, apply today at www.aiawards.ie. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you again next week.